Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. Well, last night's Sun debate between Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt was the final head-to-head of the two Tory leadership contenders before voting finishes later this week. James, it was quite a meaty debate, wasn't it? What were the biggest news lines in your view from it?
I think the biggest was the hardening of both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt's Brexit positions. Both were suggesting that either a time limit on the backstop or an exit clause from the backstop would not be sufficient for them to try and pass Theresa May's withdrawal deal through the House of Commons. And I think this does throw up an obstacle because that was the kind of territory where people thought at 5 minutes to midnight there might be some kind of compromise. Now, the big question here is this, is the view that a backstop with an exit clause or a time limit ceases to be a backstop, it becomes, you know, an extended transition period for the Irish border? Or is this a sign that Boris Johnson, most importantly, because he is the overwhelming favourite to win, Brexit position is hardening up considerably and he wouldn't be satisfied with just a change to the backstop? He wants more than that out of the EU, and getting even changes to the backstop was going to be hard enough. If you're trying to get more than that, then it's hard to see how that can all be done by October the 31st. And I think the chance of no deal, if that is the position, have gone up quite considerably.
Well, let's listen to what Boris Johnson had to say last night.
The problems with the backstop, and I said I'm not attracted, in a nutshell, no, is the answer, no, to time limits or unilateral escape hatches or all these kind of elaborate devices, glosses, codicils and so on that you could apply to the backstop. I think that the problem is very fundamental. It is really there. It has been devised by this country as an instrument of our own incarceration within the customs union.
And Fraser, this really increases the chances of a no deal, doesn't it? Which increases the chances of uproar in the Conservative Party over the next few months.
Well, yes, it does, if you take Boris at his word. I mean, the only way I think that they're going to get a compromise is if they would agree to a basic exit clause or a time limit, two things that Boris seems to have flatly ruled out. And when I listened to it, I thought it was very strange. For a start, if that's your position, pretty hardline position, why wouldn't he have said that right at the start of the campaign when he was trying to win all these Tory voters, when he was trying to present himself as being bolder on Brexit than any of his rivals? Why wait until one of the very last debates of the contest to make this declaration? Now, one theory I've got is that he's making this declaration in order to tear it up later on. That he will have to, if he wants to get a deal, he might not, but if he does, he'd have to go to the EU and say, okay, I'm willing to make a concession. The concession he would make then is saying, well, I did rule out a time limit, or I did rule out an exit clause, but now I'm willing to accept it. Now, this oddly will give him some kind of currency in the EU where they will want to see their pound of flesh delivered. They will want to see this big blonde beast being tamed in some way. So right now, I think he's hardening his position in order to soften it during the negotiations. That would be logical. But then again, perhaps I'm reading a bit much into this and he really doesn't intend to accept a codicil, an add-on, an exit clause. Maybe he does want to do what he told Andrew Neil he wanted to do, which is to tear up the entire section about the backstop. Now, the EU said it wouldn't change anything in the whole deal. To add an exit clause would be a big concession for the EU, but to rewrite that chunk, I think, is beyond the realms of the possible. So if Boris is serious, it would point quite heavily towards no deal, but I think right now that's still quite a big if.
James, what else did we learn from the debate?
I think the second half of the debate was quite striking for how pally it was. I think you sense there, it was the first time I sensed that Jeremy Hunt was trying to establish a rapport with the man who is likely to be the next Prime Minister. There was an awkward moment when Boris Johnson was being asked what his living arrangements would be in Downing Street, and Jeremy Hunt got him out of a hole by joking that he'd be living next door in number 11 to Jeremy Hunt in number 10. And I thought you definitely sensed that there was more humour there from Hunt. I thought there was a rather depressing moment when both Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt totally stuck to Tory orthodoxy on the Green Belt, which, if you really are going to stick to the idea that you can't build on any bit of a Green Belt anywhere, then you can kiss goodbye to the idea of solving the housing crisis. So I mean, those were the kind of big takeaways from the debate. I think there is a sense that this campaign is almost run its course. The view is that if people don't post their ballots on Thursday, they won't get there in time for Monday, you know, the postal system being as it is. So I think the campaign really is beginning to wind down now.
And Fraser, we've had an admission today from one of the campaigners against a no-deal Brexit that it's going to be quite difficult to stop a no-deal Brexit. What's happened there?
Well, yes, Dominic Grieve, who right now is probably the most hardcore, the sort of Remainer Bill Cash of a Tory party, has said that he pretty much admits that he can't think of a parliamentary manoeuvre that would stop no deal. Now, this is quite a big admission because he did manage to get together with others in Labour MPs in the House of Commons a few weeks ago and stop Theresa May pursuing this course. We had an Institute for Government report a month or so ago saying that we didn't think this manoeuvre could be repeated. And now Dominic Grieve is pretty much admitting it, which is odd because some of his compatriots have said, we think there are many ways that Parliament could stop this happening. Now Dominic Grieve is saying, actually, no, the only way we can be sure of stopping a no-deal Brexit is by bringing down the government and forcing a general election. Now, this is significant because how many Tory MPs really would be prepared to vote against a Tory government in a vote of no confidence? Even Oliver Letwin has said he wouldn't go that far because he doesn't think a Corbyn government would make things any better. Now, Dominic Grieve is not long for this parliamentary world anyway. He's what I call an undead Tory because he knows his constituency aren't really going to take him back. He's got nowhere else to go politically, so he doesn't really mind if he can put his own personal vision of Remain ahead of what his party activists and Tory party voters and his constituency think. So he's free from that local democratic constraint. But those who are planning to hang around in Parliament a bit longer, Oliver Letwin and more, won't be willing to go along with this. So again, this, like Boris's debate yesterday, makes the chances of no deal a bit greater because even the rebels admit they've run out of ideas.
I think one of the other things is that you realise the parliamentary margins are going to be so fine on this, because I think there probably are enough Tories on their own to no confidence the government if every opposition MP voted for the motion. But I don't think every opposition MP will vote for the motion. I think the Tories are going to set about trying to peel off one or two of these independents. Sarah Champion, a Labour MP today, was suggesting that she, if this was about stopping Brexit, she might not vote for the no confidence motion. So I think the parliamentary maths is going to be very fluid over the next few months. I think those people trying to kind of, let alone the whips on either side, but those people trying to work out the maths, this is going to be a very complicated equation. It's not going to be a simple matter of adding up.
And the other point about here is people often assume that every single Labour MP would be voting against the Conservatives in a vote of no confidence. But if there is a general election before Brexit, then the Brexit Party are going to be pretty big. I mean, I saw a poll the other day suggesting that the Brexit Party would be so popular, they'd reduce the Tories to a rump of 85 MPs. And also, the Lib Dems would do very well at the expense of Labour. Now, this is, as you write in your forthcoming cover story, Isabel, this is something that is terrifying Labour MPs. They don't want an election where the Lib Dems are doing as well, if not better, than them in the polls. So let's not take it for granted that if Dominic Grieve wanted to bring down the government, every single Labour MP would back him, because a lot of those Labour MPs are wisely nervous about the idea of a pre-Brexit general election.
And that brings up an interesting question about when the next general election will be, doesn't it? Because if we assume that MPs wouldn't actually vote against the government in a no-confidence motion, particularly not the Tory MPs who would, as you say, become ex-Tory MPs very quickly, then there won't be a Parliament-triggered
general election. And last night, James, Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt ruled out an early election. Boris Johnson actually said that there absolutely wouldn't be one before 2022. How much do you believe them on that?
I seem to remember Theresa May saying something very similar when she ran for leader. I think
there'll be one next week then in that case.
I think if Boris Johnson, if Brexit is delivered and the sky doesn't fall in and it's not a kind of disorderly and chaotic experience, then I think Boris Johnson will be very tempted to have an election soon after that, because he will want the flexibility that a large majority would give him. And I think in those circumstances, having delivered Brexit, the Tories would get a bounce in the polls. Some, not all of it, but quite a lot of the air would come out of the Brexit Party balloon. And he would have the good fortune of a split opposition with Labour, the Lib Dems and the Greens all competing for those kind of Remain votes. So I think that, you know, if there was a position where come next spring, Brexit had been delivered, the Tories had a lead in the polls, I think he would be very tempted to go for it. Remember that when he did his interview with The Spectator, he described his abilities to win elections as his true selling point.
Fraser, do you think it would be wise for him to do that, or do you think it would be the same received wisdom as took Theresa May to the polls in the snap election in 2017, where we all said that she was going to win a crushing majority and, we've ended up in the mess that we're in at the moment?
Well, it depends. A pre-Brexit general election could lead to any outcome. I could see a Labour majority, I could see a Tory Brexit party coalition, anything. But when it comes to calling elections, I don't think we can trust a word any politician says. They will do what is ever in the best interests of their political party. And my gut feeling is that Boris will want his own majority as soon as he can reasonably get one. It would also make sense for him to do so, because let's remember, he's inherited from the staggeringly inept Theresa May hardly any majority at all. That's going to make it incredibly difficult to pass any laws. Why would you stagger on for 3 years in that way if you thought there was an ability to get a majority? So that will be Boris's gamble. And if he gets through Brexit, still a pretty big if, a gamble I do expect him to take.
I mean, there are two other factors. One is, if he was no longer reliant on the Democratic Unionist Party for his parliamentary majority, that would give him more flexibility in the second round of the Brexit negotiations about how to deal with the whole Irish border question. And then I think the second thing he'll be doing, Isabel, is reading your cover story from this forthcoming magazine very carefully. Because one thing the Tory party would want to do is, they would rather, I think, fight Labour under Jeremy Corbyn in an election than a new Labour leader who might be getting some kind of honeymoon period. And so if there is a sense that Jeremy Corbyn is not going to make it to 2022, that will, I think, encourage the Tory party to try and have the election after Brexit, but before Corbyn goes.
Thank you, James, and thank you, Fraser. And you can listen, subscribe, rate and review to this podcast on the iTunes store. It's called Coffee House Shots. Thanks for listening.